Okay, so what time is it? So we want to talk a little bit about Elul. But even in that, it's still Elul. Elul, Rosh Hashanah, Yom Kippur, right? That's a good topic. Now, I happen to realize that we spoke about it last year. But, you know, every year, Elul comes back again. So we got to speak about it again. What can I do? There's a few issues. I don't know which one to start. First question may start with, why do I have to do tshuva in Elul? Why can't I just wait till Rosh Hashanah? Rosh Hashanah is a very inspiring day. So, okay, I'll wait till Rosh Hashanah. A lot of people wait till Yom Kippur. Okay, so that already sounds pretty pashut, that's not such a good idea, because we believe your first din is on Rosh Hashanah, and then Yom Kippur is like for the appeal. So obviously, it's better to get the first din right rather than have to get the din bad and then have to appeal it. Okay. So I understand you should get better Rosh Hashanah should come out. The better your Rosh Hashanah is, you can appeal. You know, the less you have to appeal, the better off you are. But okay. But why do I have to do an Elul? Maybe it's not such a hard question. But it's an important question. Because, why is it an important question? Because most people don't do during Elul. So, it's an important question because if we don't hear the answer, we're also going to do like everyone else. In other words, apparently, most people, most people probably don't do Rosh Hashanah either. But even a lot of people, I don't say most people, a lot of people do not do tshuva during Elul. So apparently, they don't know the answer to this question. Because if they really knew the answer to this question, they would feel the hechrok to do during Elul. But apparently, on some level, they feel, yeah, what's the rush? I can wait till Rosh Hashanah. So that's the first question. Why is there an inyan? There's a special system was created. You start early in Elul. We have Tkiyas Shofar in Elul. We have Slichas in Elul. Why do we have to start in Elul? So, the most simple answer is that tshuva is not such an easy thing to do. Right? That's tshuva is not so easy. And many, many people, you know, say they're doing tshuva, and they don't really succeed, at least fully. And therefore, if you don't start in Elul, it's either a simen or a siba that you're probably not going to succeed. And therefore, it's not such a good tshuva. I don't say it's nothing, because we all mentioned this partial credit by tshuva. Why is it? It's a simen. Because it shows that you don't take it so seriously, right? If you took something seriously, you would be thinking about it in advance. Right? So it's definitely a siman. It's a siba because the biggest problem with tshuva, what usually happens is people have a very short-term memory. And people not just have a short-term memory, but human nature is that we get very emotional about things and then we forget about it. That's, anyone who has experience knows that sometimes we get very excited. I'm going to lose 25 pounds. I'm going to go on a diet, and then a week later, it's completely forgotten and you're eating your ice cream. You know, I can tell you from my own experience, very often. So we go ahead and we get inspired and we make a commitment and then we don't follow through. So the danger of doing tshuva on Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur is that that's very likely what will happen. Rosh Hashanah is a very inspiring day. Yom Kippur is a very inspiring day. So then we'll get inspired, we'll say tshuva. But after Rosh Hashanah, it's not an inspiring day. For sure, Sukkot, right? It's almost like that HaKadosh Baruch Hu fixed it, but dafka way to really challenge us. Because if there'd be yeshiva after Yom Kippur, okay, But we have Bein Hazmanim right after Yom Kippur, which is a, you know, the heart. So we can't even implement any of our Kabbalahs because it's a whole different setup. And it's a lends itself to basically forgetting everything and no inspiration. And then by the time Yom Kippur is over, it's all gone and forgotten. And that's what usually happens. Right? I mentioned many times that gyms, they say gyms make a lot of money. The reason why they make a lot of money is they don't charge by when you come. They charge membership. And they make a big deal. You know, for a year's membership, it's only $100. That means if you're assuming you're going to go every day, it's less than a 30 cents a day. Wow, what a bargain. Now, of course, the person signs up for a membership and he's all excited, I'm going to go every day. He goes one time and then he never comes back again. Right? If all the people that were members would come to the gym, there'd be no room. But the gym knows that 99% of the people that take out membership aren't going to come. Well, 99%, but a large percent. Because people get enthusiastic about something, they really think they're going to do it, and then they lose their enthusiasm. So that's what very, very, very often happens by Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur, because that's what happened to people. And we have to know that. That's human beings. So the solution, one of the solutions, is starting an Edel. Because by starting an Edel, you already get a momentum. You get used to it. It's not just, I had an idea, a thought. I got, you know, inspiration. Inspiration comes and goes. But I actually implemented it. I started getting into a habit. I got into a program. It was done. The worst thing is to make your Kabbalah on Yom Kippur when you never can implement it because there's nothing on Kippur, you can't implement it. You can't even write it down because you can't write on Yom Kippur. Then comes Bein Hazmanim, so you don't implement it because it's Bein Hazmanim. And by the time Sukkot is over, most people who make Kabbalahs on Yom Kippur don't even remember what they were Mekabel on Yom Kippur. It's like almost like a joke. Say, well, you're Mekabel? I don't know. So the beauty of Elo is it gives us time to put it to by acting on it, it makes it more sincere. It makes us gets us used to it, makes it more real. It also, there's a different advantage, but this is already, maybe we missed this already, that by giving you Edo, you got time to see if it actually works. And if it doesn't work, you can try something else. It's probably a little bit too late for that, because I don't know, I'm sorry, with like a week before Rosh Hashanah, I don't know if it's you can do that anymore. But that's also an advantage of Edel, that you actually can experiment. You make a Kabbalah, you can experiment, then you can see, well, you can twitch it, fix it. But besides that, I think the real main thing is the acting on it makes it reinforce it, makes it a real, much more serious commitment. So I think those are two reasons you have to start on Edel. I mean, one is it's a sign of demonstrating sincerity. If you don't start in Edel, you're showing HaKadosh Baruch Hu, you're acting that you're not sincere, and that itself is a psul in your tshuva. It, the Maisa makes the tshuva much more likely. Rav Itzala has a different thing, which is a mystical thing. The Rav Itzala says, we said this many times, Rav Itzala in the Koich Ve'or in the Or Yisrael writes that Hashem runs the world, judges the world like Bezdin judge the world. It's a chesed to us because we can't relate to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, so we can only imagine things that are human. So Hashem makes a whole court case like human. That's why we need the Satan, the Mekatre. The Shofar confuses the Satan. You know, the whole thing is only, Hashem doesn't get confused, Hashem, but it's all made like a human court. So he says in a human court, a secret, if you want to get the human court, the first cases of the day get off better. And just like, because when you come to the king, the first case, you say, listen, I'm sorry, I feel, you know, the king is okay. But after a while, the king begins to lose his patience. Because after all the people that he starts seeing, all the people that do Averis, he starts getting his temper, goes up, 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 up. And at some point, he's not so forgiving anymore. So he says that the sooner a person is judged on Rosh Hashanah, the better off you are. That's how Hashem makes it in the world, that the people that get judged first get more rachmanis. And how do you get judged first? So Rav Yitzchak has a few different systems, but the simplest system that's in Biyadenu is first come, first serve. So he says the people that start doing tshuva earlier, they get online first because they're getting ready for the din first. Therefore, they end up stamped. They get a better din on Rosh Hashanah. So it's just practically, Rav Yitzchak says, besides what I said because you'll do a better tshuva by starting earlier. He says even without that, it's just stam. You want to be first in. You want to get in first. You know, it's like we gave the mashal to people. The yeshiva has a scholarship fund. A camp has a scholarship fund. So the first person that applies to the fund, you know, we have $10,000. We have $1 million in the fund. Sure, no problem. So we give you, we have a stock of fund. The first guy that comes, you know, we have a nice big stock of fund. The first guy that asks you for money, you give him. But after the 50th guy comes and the funds are being depleted, and then someone comes and there's almost no money left in the fund, then you're ready. You know, I'm sorry, you know. Okay, I'll give you something, but I can't give you too much. So the earlier the person comes in, the better off. All right, that's our fitzo. Okay, anyway, so we have to start doing tshuva in Elul. Which is, by the way, anyone know that we're in Edel? Just now, besides starting in Edel, there's one day in Edel that apparently is very special. What is that? No. Erev Rosh Hashanah. Erev Rosh Hashanah is very... Now, the yeshiva has this great minhag, which seems to be, I don't know, we always do this yeshiva, that Erev Rosh Hashanah we give off. And right, Erev Shua is also a very chashva day, we give off. Shiva seems to get, and Purim is a very, very chashva day, we give off. Chanukah is a special day, Shiva seems to have a tendency, like Ba'om, where, you know, all the chashva days we give off. But Erev Rosh Hashanah is one of the special, special days. Hor Rai, it's a special day, just to read, this is a tour. The tour is discussing saying Slichas. And he quotes a medrash. It's a medrash Tanchuma on the pasuk Lechatan v'yom harishon. It's actually there. I actually saw it, but it's easier instead of looking at the medrash, just I know it's in the Torah. So he says that it brings a mashal, the Torah, that there's a medina that owes money to the king, and they didn't pay. So the king is coming to attack to collect the money. So he says, when the king starts getting close, so first the Gedolim of the Medina go out to beg the king to have Rachmanis, and he gives them off a third. Once he comes closer, so then most of the city goes out, or a good part of the city goes out, and they beg the king. The king gives them off another third. And then when he comes really close, so the whole city goes out, and they beg the king, and he gives them off the last third. So those are three times. So says the Medrash, what are the three times? Erev Rosh Hashanah, the Gedolim go out, and they ask Rachmanis, and Hashem gives off a third. It's a nice amount. Then what happens? Aseres Yemei Yomim, that means all Rosh Hashanah and Aseres Yemei Tshuva. That's a big chunk. It's equal to Erev Rosh Hashanah. Pretty amazing. Then gets off another third. And then Yom Kippur gives off the last third. So the way at least the Medrash Tanchuma sets it up, that on Erev Rosh Hashanah, you get off the equivalent, same amount, as on Rosh Hashanah, and which sounds very fair, but that's what it says. So I don't know. I can't explain it. But it definitely seems to say that Erev Rosh Hashanah is a major day. So Erev Rosh Hashanah, especially for the married guys, so again, you have to help your wives, right? But the single guys, they have nothing to do Erev Rosh Hashanah. What are you going to do? You don't have to go to the store. You don't have to do anything. So that is a day, should be designated a little bit to tshuva or something practical. You should, we mention every year that a person has to write down his kabbalas. You can either do that Erev Rosh Hashanah or Erev Yom Kippur. Can't have to do it, but better Erev Rosh Hashanah. The reason why you have to write them down is for many, many reasons. First of all, I once saw in a parish, I think it was in a marsha, but I never found it again, so I can't scream for promise in marsha. Then he said, that's what it means, kuchu imachem dvarem v'shuva Hashem. That kuchu, that should be in your hand. It's written down. But I never found it again, so I don't know. If someone could find it for me, I'd be very happy.
Would it be better to write it on Rosh Hashanah or like in the beginning of Elul?
No, it can be written. It can be written on the beginning of Elul. It's fine too, but you can write it twice. But if it's the earlier you do it, the better, I think. But if you really want, I would do it twice. You know, that's what I would do because you get it.
Because of the Indian?
No, because you get it more sharper. First time, it's just you're not sure, and you actually actually do it, you're probably more into it. But okay, anyway, but the Maisa, why is it important to write down? A few reasons. First of all, the most important reason is if you don't write it down, you're bound to forget. But we kept on saying that it's you're fooling yourself that you're saying I'm doing tshuva if you don't write it down, because realistically, you're gonna forget your Kabbalahs. You're surely gonna forget your inspiration, your feeling. And if you write it down, and I don't just mean write down one word. You write it down and you write down a little bit what's motivating you and what you want to do, you know, a nice something that, so then you can take it out, you know, you can make up a kabbalah that every Rosh Chodesh I read my paper, or every Friday, or every, and then you get yourself back into it every week or every month. So then you'll remember it. If you don't write it down, you'll 90% you'll forget the Kabbalahs completely. And even if you don't remember, if you remember the Kabbalahs, you'll forget your inspiration, you'll forget why you made up. You got it written down, the whole thing. Now the thing, it might take more than a minute to write it down. You have to write down the reason, you know, write it down like a Zunta writing. So that, I think, the most important reason, because when you write it down, it has kiyum, it lasts. The second reason why it's important to write is because varim shebelev lo havei dvarim, right? Which basically means that even words are cheap, but thoughts are even cheaper than words. Which means that you think something, it doesn't very often, even in learning. For example, in learning, I remember, you know, when I used to say a chabura in my early years, before the chabura, I would write it all down. And then after the chabura, this is interesting, I would write it a second time. Why did I write it the first time? Because I was afraid they're going to schlag me up and I say the chabura. I wanted to have it really clear. But I know that, but just going into my head, it's not mukhruk, because it could be in your head, you skip steps. Your head, the head is, you know, you don't really, you have an ishir. A guy will come in to say a pshat, and he'll say a pshat, and he'll start talking, and then in the middle he'll say, oh, never mind. What do you mean, well, never mind? You thought you had a good pshat. But till you said it, it was great when it was in your head, but when you start speaking it out, oh, no, I realize, you realize yourself it's no good. So when you verbalize it, and especially when you write it, which your writing is slower than verbalizing, if you write it really clearly, you're crystallizing the thought. When something's still in your head, it's not crystallized. So I was worried about my chabura. In my head it sounds like I had a great answer, but when I'm going to write it, I'll realize that I skipped a step. You know, I made a jump, and there's no bridge. I just jumped over a river without a bridge, and I just forgot that I needed a bridge there. So, you know, then after the chabura, I'd have to write it again, because, you know, there are people, there were ma'ora points during the chabura, which are very often good points, and I realized I have to change it a little bit. But anyway, so writing it down helped crystallize the thoughts. So I really think that Erev Rosh Hashanah, first of all, a person should spend a good amount of time figuring out what he's doing for tshuva, which we'll discuss, hopefully, figuring out how you're to do tshuva in itself should take a few hours. Really making a decent plan of tshuva takes a few hours. So first of all, you have to figure out what to do. But then, besides which, after you figure out what to do, you got to write it down. It's very important to write down, because if you don't write down, you just won't remember, and it's not crystallized. Okay. Okay. Now we get to the main part. I don't know the main part, but the important part. Question is, how in the world, how do you do tshuva? So we discuss this every year, but say it again. There's one of the most frustrating things of tshuva is that many people have tried to do tshuva and they made kabbalas and then they find that they didn't succeed. And then they get frustrated. Why should I try again when last year it didn't go? So there's many different answers. It's because last year it didn't go doesn't mean it won't go this year. You're a year older, right? But there's also another answer that we always said, someone said today in Shir, that there is partial credit for tshuva. But I want to explain that because it's like a person who said it was right, but they got to explain it. There's two different types of partial credits, right? Because it's our famous thing that there's two ways to cut the grapefruit, right? So there's two ways you can get partial credit. And it's a very, very big difference. Tshuva is, what do you need for tshuva? Someone, I'm getting tired of talking, so help me. How do you do tshuva? Chazata, aziva, sachet, or kaboa, abo, and vidui. Right, three ingredients. Okay, we'll leave out vidui. Vidui seemingly is relatively easy. So charata and aziva, sachet. So the Svarim say that there's partial credit. Now, there are two ways you can get partial credit. One way of partial credit is you just have charata without aziva sechet. Simple example. I have a very bad habit. Right? I do something, I know it's wrong. I know it's wrong. I know I shouldn't be doing it. I know it's terrible. But it's just, I smoke. I know it's bad to smoke. It's not healthy. But it's too hard to stop. I'm not even going to try. Too hard, it's too painful. I once tried, it didn't go. It's too hard, that's it. I'm not even trying, forget it, I'm not even trying. But I feel bad. So that's charata without aziva sachet. So that's partial credit. I did one half of tshuva without the other half of tshuva. The other way of partial credit is I have charata, but the real level of charat that you're supposed to have is 100 units. I have 50 units of charat. I have aziv esachet. The real level of aziv esachet is supposed to be 100 units. I have 50 units of aziv esachet. So, right, so you cut the tshuva, right? You got a different way of half. Which partial tshuva is better? 100% charat and 0 aziv esachet? Or 50% of charat and 50% of aziv esachet. The second one is 100 times better. Why? Because if you're making a cake, so you have one ingredient without the other. Okay, you got partial credit. At least we'll have flour. But if you make a small cake, you have all the ingredients. But you got a cake. It's a small cake, but it's a cake. You make a human. So the human has a head without a heart. That's so good. You got a puny human. A puny human, a junky car, But the car, at least, should have all the parts. So even though it is true, and the Sfarim do say beferish, that there's partial credit of charata without aziva sachet, but that's not for and that's why you should never give up, because everything is good, but that's not for the partial credit that we aim for. We aim for the partial credit of quasi charata and quasi aziva sachet. Now, we should aim for the total, but the truth is, realistically, I don't know if we can really expect to do 100% tshuva. Because I think that's why the minhag is that we still say vidui on averes that you did last year. Because we assume we didn't do 100% tshuva. But we try to do as good as we can the partial of partial charat and partial aziv esachet. Now, so let's discuss that. Because that's a better, right? That's a better partial. And it makes sense. Makes a lot of sense. That's a much better partial. And therefore, it's worth much more. You have to. Now they go the other way. Okay, I don't know if he knows. All right. Anyway, we'll see. We lost him. We lost him. Okay. Oh. Okay. Anyway, so the question is as follows: how do you go ahead? If that's the case, that you want to do both, if you want to do both. So this is why tshuva is so hard. You want to do a real charata is not so hard. You know, it's very easy to feel bad that you did something. Now, it says really that real charata is not so easy. But to some extent, you know, we're talking about 50% charata. Okay, 50% charata is not so hard. I feel bad. I spoke lashon hara. I feel bad. You know, that's not so hard. You know, but how do you do 50% aziva sachet? That ain't so simple. So I always tell a story. It's a true story because I like it. There was a guy in Israel who came to Israel with a suitcase full of material that was not so appropriate. We'll leave it at that, right? Whatever it was, reading material, tapes, I don't know exactly, right? Things that wasn't so appropriate. And he was running a gamach in the dormitory. Very nice, big bal chesed. So we spoke to him, and you know, it's really not, you know, this is really not so appropriate, and but I like it, I need it, I think it was the music, the truth is, it was, you know, music that wasn't so kosher, but it was some other things too, so we spoke to him, yeah, you know, you're right, I'm gonna change, you know, I'm gonna take all my tapes and put it in my suitcase and lock up the suitcase. So I asked him, you know, if you want to do Jew, why are you putting in your suitcase? Why don't we just throw them in the garbage? He says, throw in the garbage? You kidding? He says, I know for sure a week after Rosh Hashanah I'm going to change my mind and I want to go to one again. I'm going to throw in the garbage. It's going to cost me money to buy them all. Why should I throw them in the garbage? That's not real Kabbalah Hasid, right? When you make a Kabbalah Hasid that you're almost guaranteed that it ain't gonna last. I don't want to say it's nothing. You know, we say the partial credit, but that's not a real Kabbalah Hasid. A Kabbalah Hasid, even to be a partial Kabbalah Hasid, has to be that there's at least a chance, an honest chance, that you could continue. Could be it's not, you know, it's a fifth, it's not guaranteed. It could be that you can be knocked out by a strong, you know, could be that what happens is that a new Nisayan came along and knocked you out. You know, that doesn't mean you didn't have a good Kabbalah Osset. I made a strong Kabbalah Osset and then someone came along and tempted me with a delicious piece of cake. Okay, so I got tempted. But a Kabbalah Osset like this guy, where no one's even tempting him now, and he's already committing himself that I'm going to flunk in a day after Rosh Hashanah, Yom Kippur, that's not a Kabbalah Hasid. That's a very, very weak Kabbalah Hasid. So the kunz, and this is not easy, is to figure out a Kabbalah Hasid that can last. Not a Kabbalah Hasid that you're not going to succeed. That's not going to last. A Kabbalah Hasid is not going to last. I don't say it's worthless. It's better than nothing. And it's something. But that's not a real Kabbalah Hasid. Now, don't want people to get depressed. Let's say you made a Kabbalah Hasid and it didn't last. That doesn't mean that you didn't. I mean, maybe it had potential to last. Just something came along and knocked it out. But if you know the Chatzchila is not going to last, that's no good.
How do you have 50% zivuzachet?
Because I did a Kabbalah Hasid that had a 50% chance of working. It really had a 50% chance of working.
And even if it doesn't?
And then it didn't. Okay.
That's called 50%?
Yeah. And Rosh Hashanah, it had a 50% chance of working. But in this guy's case, it didn't even have a 1% chance of working. He was just lying.
Can you do 50% as he was okay?
Yeah.
Stop speaking Lashon Hara after these?
No, but I'm even saying better than that. I'm trying. I'm 50% on all my Lashon Hara. It depends. It depends how if I don't get a strong, you know, it'll last a certain amount, and it's and it might, and it has a potential. I just got to get to this. Well, yeah, I think they call it the cake. But let me get to it. I'm going to explain more. So you have to make a kabbalah on something that might last. So that's why it's hard making kabbalahs, because you have to take in the fact to knowing the future that you're going to run out of steam. You know, now you're all enthused. It's right before Rosh Hashanah. But I have to make a kabbalah that's going to last logically after I run out of steam, because otherwise I'm not making a sincere kabbalah. I'm just fooling myself. I know that a week after Rosh Hashanah comes Sukkot, I'm not going to be in the mood. So what kind of, if I make a kabbalah that logically I can know that's not going to last over Sukkot, that's a pegam in my kabbalah. I'm just fooling. I'm making believe. That's not a real kabbalah. You're not sincere. Or you know it's not going to last. So it's not a real kabbalah. The second thing, I'm getting out of time, of course, is that even if you make a kabbalah that's going to last, you want to make a kabbalah on your main averis, not on your, you know, everyone got this big averis and trivial averis, so to speak. I don't know if this thing is trivial. But you want to make a kabbalah on the main one. Now, realistically, you maybe can't make a kabbalah on all the main ones, because I can't make a kabbalah. Let's say I have a problem. I don't daven with kavana. You make a kabbalah, I'm going to, from the kabbalah from now on, I'm going to daven everywhere with kavana. That's I'm lying to myself. But you have to make a kabbalah that will last, that will have a potential. Again, it might only be 50%, it might only be 5%, but there's a potential that it will lead me to succeed eventually in my goal, right? In other words, I want to be a Talmud Chacham.
Even if it's not this year's.
Right. In other words, I want to be a Talmud. Most things in life don't happen right away. You want to become rich. You don't become rich, I'm going to find a business deal and I'm going to make $1 million. It doesn't happen. A guy is a pauper, doesn't find $1 million business deal. You make $10, then you invest in the stock market, you make $20, then you invest and you make $50, and after 20 years, you make your $1 million deal. You want to become a Talmud Chacham. You're not going to go, okay, I want to be a Talmud Chacham, so I'm going to be, right? I tell the guys the story of one of my kids, that my wife was trying to convince them in Israel that they should take English lessons. So she told him, don't you want to learn, be able to read all these nice books we have in the house? We have these children's books in the houses. I don't know how old the kid was, but he wasn't too old. She said, don't you want to be able to read them? Well, so he got inspired. So he went to English lessons. Came back from his first English lesson, took out the book. Hey, I can't read it. You promised me I could read it if I go to English lessons. That's an 8-year-old kid, but whatever. But the, right, you know, most things in life, gradual. So the kabbalah could be a kabbalah that I'm going to take the first step, which eventually will lead me to the final step. Now, it might only be 10% chance, because there's so many places that I can be, you know, just like, what are the odds I'm going to make $1 million? There's so many places I can lose the money, so many pitfalls along the way. But at least there's a potential possibility. So if there's a potential possibility, so it's a partial kabbalah. Right? So what you have to find, what you really have to, and this takes a lot of iyun, is you have to figure out what your main problems are. You have to, first of all, isolate what my biggest problems are that I want to do kabbalah on. Then you have to figure out what's a realistic first step that I can do now, that I can honestly make an honest kabbalah that I really can stick to, and that it's potentially that will eventually, maybe in 10 years from now, bring me to the fact that I'll reach the goal. I'll give you a simple example. They say Rav Shach was very big in a kabbalah that you should bench from a bencher. That was one of his big kabbalahs. He always told people to make the kabbalah that you bench from a bencher. You make an asher yotzar from an asher yotzar, or whatever. Now, the beauty of that kabbalah is it's relatively easy. You can carry a bencher in your pocket. Most people have today, they have all kinds of, right, you know, pocket sitters, little sitters, right? I was in Queens. They were giving out pocket asher yotzars in Queens. So I took one, Very nice. And an Al Michi on the back and Asher Yasser on the front. Very convenient. Right? So, you know, I have a few interesting things in here, but okay. Got a little bench here, a little sitter. Right? Mincha Ma'ariv, Perchas HaMazon, Tfilas HaDarech. Okay. So, the Ma'isa, and you know, it's a kiss b'tol kiss, so you can go in the bathroom with it, right? So, the Ma'isa, you know, it's not such a hard thing to bench with a bencher if you have a bencher in your pocket. So, it's not a kabbalah that's difficult. On the other hand, Rav Shachel, that's a kabbalah that could actually take you places. Why? Because if you bench with a bencher, you'll probably do a better job benching. If you bench with more kavana, then after you bench with more kavana, maybe you'll start davening Shmona Esrei with more kavana. You daven with more kavana, you have more dveikus with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, right? Because davening with more kavana brings you closer to Hashem. And as well, so it could be, you know, right now I don't make brachas with kavana. I'd probably even skip words in my brachas. I don't make bench with kavana. I'd say Asher Yatzar properly. So if I go ahead and I make a kabbalah to use a sitter, which is relatively easy, it's possible, it's not crazy to say, that in 10 years from now, I'll be davening with kavana. Now, it's very possible, it won't happen, but at least it's in the realm of possibility. So when I make that kabbalah that I'm going to bench with a sitter, I'm making a real kabbalah that's real, that I can actually keep. I'm not just fooling myself, and it has a real potential to get me to the goal. So that's where that's where like the best types of kabbalahs. You have to find something which is easy that you probably keep. I don't say you shouldn't make any other kabbalahs, but those are the best. You find something easy that you can keep, and on the other hand, that it potentially will lead you to a big goal. Now, a few different tricks. Sometimes there's other tricks. We mentioned this, you know, there so that to make sure that you keep it. I the example I used to always give is that's obviously if you can learn more is a major kabbalah, because Talmud Torah is keneged kulam, and learning brings to all kinds of brasi etzara brasi Torah tavlin, right? So if I'm going to make a kabbalah to learn more, that's probably just as good, better than benching from a bencher. Problem is, you know, that's very hard. And right now I think a kabbalah I'm going to learn more, but now I'm enthused. But comes in the, you know, during Kitz to Kislev, and I get, you know, realistically I know this man, I'm not going to be in the mood of learning more. So there's an Eitza. The Eitza is you figure out a way that you're stuck. Right? We gave this mashal. We said I'm running late, that the Navaritic mashal of the train that goes, okay, we'll leave the mashal. But anyway, so the example I used to give is a guy in Israel, it's only an example, please don't hold me to this example, that in Israel, Rabbi Kinarik, a big tzaddik, so he was a super maspid, he learned day and night, and more than that too, and he would learn with people all day long, because he learns all day long, so you know, you want to learn with him 2 o'clock in the morning, fine, 2 o'clock in the morning, I'm available, right? And that's such an exaggeration. So you would go over Rabbi Kinarik and say, can we have a Seder? He says, yeah, well, I'm free, Motzoi Shabbos 11 to 12. Okay, but now you're stuck, right? Because if you have a Seder in Rabbi Kinarik from 11 to 12, you're going to learn Rabbi Kinarik from 11 to 12, because you're not going to drop him because I wanted to go out to pizza, you know? So you created a situation whereby you're, you know, you solve the problem of losing enthusiasm. If I make a kabbalah, I'm going to learn every Motzah on Shabbos 11 to 12. Come on, who are you fooling? You're not going to stick to that. You'll be next week, you'll lose your enthusiasm. But if I ask Rabbi Kinarik to do it, and I'm stuck, so then I got a good kabbalah. So there's a trick to try and sometimes put teeth into a kabbalah. Can't ask Rabbi Kinarik, you ask someone else to the Chavrusa, you commit yourself to the Chavrusa, you ask a guy who's stronger than you, you ask a guy who's weaker than you, so someone that you're a little bit committed to, and he's not going to let you get out of it so fast. So then you committed. So you create a situation. Like that's a whole lumdus of Daf Yomi. I'm sure that there are people that learn Daf Yomi that if it was up to them now, they would stop. But they already invested so much energy. I'm going to stop after 2 years of learning, you know. They say that the Miftah Mayo was one day was telling everyone how he's quitting smoking. It was very uncharacteristic, but they say he was trying to create. He knew it's a hard nisayin to quit smoking, so he's making hachreichim. Because what if I am be bizyonis? If I told the, I announced in front of the whole yeshiva, by the way, I'm quitting smoking today. How would I do? You know, now tomorrow I'm going to want to smoke. But I just told all the guys in Shiva I'm quitting smoking, and a little bit gaiva. you know, my gaiva is not going to let me smoke. So he created a situation where he was stuck. Now, he could still smoke in the secret in his office. Okay, but it still probably wasn't staying in his office as much as I do. So he created a situation where he was stuck. So that takes a lot of chokhmah too. Sometimes, instead of picking something easy, like the bencher, which you think you're going to do because it's so easy, of course, why shouldn't I do it? You can pick something a little bit harder, but you create a hechroch, why you have to do it. And then you get the event. So the idea with Kabbalah is you pick something which is relatively easy. Reshiva used to say you try picking very often Kabbalahs and things that you're good in, because it's something that you're good in is more likely that you end up doing it. So you want to get something you're going to do. If you pick a Kabbalah and something that you're bad in, it makes it even less likely you're going to end up keeping it. Right? So you pick a Kabbalah and something that you're good in, likely that you end up keeping it. You try and find something easy. You find and fine teeth in it. You try and figure out a hechruch. You have to write it down. You write it down with the motivation of why you're doing it. That takes a lot of time. It can keep you people busy. That's why we have off Erev Rosh Hashanah. So the guys have lots of time to do it. Oh, okay.